Stephen Brunt joins us, as always, on your Tuesday morning, brought to you by Eastside Kia, and it's no bull. Receive 0% financing up to 84 months, combined with up to $4,000 in discounts. Get a 2014 Rio automatic for just $16,380. Visit eastsidekia.ca. Old-time rock and roll, Steve. That's the one that gets your auntie out of her chair at the wedding.
Often played by a really terrible cover band.
Yeah. Yes. But if you have the DJ, it's like, hey, could we hear the, yeah, you want Bob Seger with the, yeah, oh, that'd be great. And then there goes Auntie, Lil. She's getting out there to cut the rug.
That would be, though, right? You talk to guys in bar bands and things they have to play. I'd love the list, you know, of things people holler at them when they're drunk at 1 a.m.
Yeah. We used to have a game at weddings where we'd throw quarters at the time into an ashtray and pick what the next song was going to be. And you'd never go by like more than 5 or 6 deep because all those cliche songs would find their way in.
Well, that's to give the people what they want. I believe that's part of the deal.
That's right. So are you going to be at Tim Hortons Stadium this weekend?
Me or anyone else? Like, that's a really cool. I've got my tickets.
Yeah.
I've had tickets for 2 games already while I wasn't around. So my mom would have gone, but 2 tickets for games that did not happen. And, you know, I rolled into town yesterday amidst all of these. Well, Bob Young saying, you know, we will work to the last minute to get this done, and various city people here saying, it's not going to be safe. So, I don't know. You know, if there is a game there, I was kind of happy that I would be back for the first game in the new stadium. Otherwise, I was going to miss it. But it's very hard to read and listen to what we've heard in the last 24 hours and say, darn right, there's going to be a game. And I'm not sure there should be a game. You know, it's what a schmozzle. You know, the moment when you move into a new stadium ought to be kind of a triumphant thing for a franchise. Everybody should be really excited. You know, it should all be wrapped in a bow. And the notion that people are going to walk in potentially to a construction site where half the seats aren't going to be usable, and half the amenities aren't going to be there. I know why the Ticats desperately want to get in there because number one they don't have an alternative.
Yeah.
But what a mess this thing has turned into, and what an embarrassment.
Well, and the thing of it is, too, if it's not ready, that's one thing. If it's not safe, that's another thing. You're putting so much investment and time and work and all that into this. Make the first impression a good one rather than have it half full or three quarters full, and whoever's there, all they will have to say is about how the thing isn't ready. Just take your time with it, right?
Except. That's right. And that's, you know, and ideally, you know, what would have happened here would have been the Winnipeg situation, not that that was ideal in any way, where people would have said at a certain point, you know what, let's get this thing right, shut her down, we'll start next season, and it'll all be ready, and we'll get the bugs out, and it'll be perfect. But of course, you know, because, you know, for a variety of reasons, most of which actually fall back on the Tiger Cats themselves, where they decided, you know, not to build on a different site, where they decided to build it where the old Ivor Wynne was, so they had to tear Ivor Wynne down. They played an entire season in Guelph, but they gave themselves no real wiggle room this year. You know, they didn't really have a plan B. And, you know, Labor Day Monday in Hamilton is, you know what Labor Day games are all about, right? There's, you know, the 2 great Labor Day games in the league. It's their big money game. It's their big rivalry game. It's, you know, and it's also the weekend when, you know, at their alternate site at McMaster University, kids are coming back to school and the MAC team is playing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you're boxed in, right? And it's not surprising or shocking or shouldn't be to anyone that construction delays happen and that all kinds of stuff gets in the way of things being delivered on time. That seems to be the rule, you know, rather than the exception.
Yeah.
But, man, they are painted. They painted themselves into a terrible corner here, and I'm not sure they're going to get out of it.
I'm looking at the new jerseys. Maybe at least that's a positive for Hamilton amid a one-win season in a stadium that's not done.
Yeah, I was looking at those pictures today. I thought they were kind of, I guess, yeah, they're kind of austere, right? They didn't go overboard on the design. It's kind of simple, and I do like that, and it looks great, and the players like it. But this season has been, you know, from a Hamilton point of view, could it have gone worse? I'm not sure.
Well, who is enjoying their season in the Canadian Football League?
Well, pretty much, you know, I would say everybody, you know, Winnipeg West has at least had some very good moments and all kinds of things to, and in Ottawa, at least they've got a team back, although it's looking more and more like a really terrible team. You know, offensively, maybe one of the worst teams in the history of the league. But, you know, Hamilton, Toronto, Montreal, it's there's not really a flicker of light there, is there?
Zero. And now, the one thing that seemed like was going to breathe some fresh air was maybe a new young quarterback in Montreal and in Hamilton. What a week it's been for quarterbacks, but again, we'll stay with Hamilton. They lose Caleros early.
Yep.
I like Lefevre. Now he is done. It's
yep.
for Bob Young, I almost feel bad for him because the stadium, maybe a new quarterback, this is going to be the year, and none of it's panned out.
None of it's panned out, and it's not just the quarterback situation that's made them, you know, and they have lost some close games that, you know, they were in. But any team in the league, if you said, okay, you're going to be stuck with your third and fourth guys, I'm not sure that any team in the league, no matter how good the other players were, would survive very well in what has always been a quarterback league. So, yeah, they bring in Caleros and get rid of Burris, which, you know, I still think was the right thing to do at the time. But, you know, he has a concussion. He's still the street clothes. No sign of him coming back. Lefevre, a guy they, you know, didn't re-sign in the offseason. He's playing out his last year of his contract, steps in. And he's, you know, you like him more than I do, but I got to say, his numbers are pretty good, and he was confident. He blows out his knee. He's gone for the year. He'll never play for the Ticats again. And, you know, now you're down to Jeremiah Mazzoli and Stephen McGee. Mazzoli was the number two guy to start the season. Didn't look good. McGee hasn't played at all. You know, they've got an offensive line that's been suspect all year, so they haven't been able to get the running game going. The defense, you know, as in all teams where they struggle offensively, the defense wears out eventually. Like has happened with Ottawa. You saw that happen in the Ottawa game, right? That, you know, if your offense is terrible and terrible and terrible, eventually your defense is going to give. So, you know, it's calamitous. And if somebody's got to finish second in the East and make the playoffs, then maybe it'll be Hamilton. And maybe by then everybody will be healthy. But no, you couldn't have scripted. You couldn't come up with a worse script for these guys. And I do feel for Bob Young as well, even though, again, he has something to do with the fact that the stadium is not where it should be. And he could have saved himself a lot of grief if he hadn't fought that fight.
Mm-hmm.
But the guy has lost buckets of money on the Ticats. And he's just kind of finally in a situation where he might have been able to recoup some of those losses. And everything that could possibly go wrong has gone wrong.
Stephen Brunt, our guest here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Shifting gears, the Blue Jays talked about it, Friday? Wondering
yep.
when the conversation can shift to the offseason and how do you improve for next year? And I would think we are now safe in saying that we are there. The month of August has been terrible, 6-15.
Mm-hmm.
They've scored the fewest runs out of any team this month. And Jose Bautista between... Boy, I'll tell you what, I'm very curious your take on this guy because he does not, again, losing sucks and everybody's cranky when you're losing and all of that. But between the criticism at the deadline of doing nothing, getting tossed out of that ball game, and then reading quotes about wondering if ownership is dedicated to winning, I just wonder how long the future is for Jose Bautista in Toronto.
Well, it's probably best not to react emotionally to this. You know, he's reacting emotionally to a degree, although he's kept it under a lid for most of this year. He is an emotional guy. He's also a very smart guy, and he's very aware of what's going on around him. But, you know, in a baseball sense, they got him for another 2 years on an incredibly team-friendly contract, and he's had a tremendous season. You know, if you look at all of his numbers put together, and you look at the fact that he's played every defensive position they've asked him to, if you look at the unselfish at-bats he's had, the walks he's taken, you know, the fact that he was the guy kind of as everything fell apart around him, he was the one guy in the lineup, I guess Melky as well, you know, who was very consistent. From a baseball point of view, you would be nuts to sever ties with Jose Bautista. Now, you know, he may go to them and say, get me out of here, and that's a different conversation. But, he's an incredibly valuable baseball asset. But I think his frustration in a lot of ways mirrors the frustration of people, you know, a lot of fans, I think. You're looking at something to lash out about. And, you know, it was so great. They had an unbelievable month of May, and they've had a terrible month of August for a whole bunch of reasons. And, yeah, we're now into the 2015 conversation. I think that's safe. You know, my white flag moment happened over the weekend, and not just because of them, but because of what some of the other teams are doing right now. So, I think when at the trade deadline, Jose Bautista, who is the dominant personality in that clubhouse, voiced the feelings of his teammates, frustrated that they didn't make a move at the deadline. I think that's fine. You know, I understand his, you know, that he got tossed for not that vehemently arguing a ball strike call the other day, but he has been very disciplined by and large in terms of his reaction to umpires this year compared to last year. And he's had a great, great season. So I give him a lot of rope. And I know people are going to focus, like, well, they want to blame somebody for this year, right? So they want to blame Alex Anthopoulos, or they're going to want to blame John Gibbons, who, you know, the latter who's done, actually, I think, a tremendous job given what he's had to deal with. And they're going to want to blame Bautista because he's the number one guy, and he makes himself the focus. But, you know, from a baseball point of view, you got to step back and not be emotional about it and say, this guy is way better than everybody. He's the best player on this team by a stretch. And, you know, you can't afford to run him out of town. You just can't.
They got 2 years left with him and Edwin, and all of a sudden it looks like a young starting rotation next year. What do they do with Dickey and or Burley? Because all of a sudden those guys are very expensive and not in their prime anymore.
I think that, you know, that'll be the conversation, which is you probably move one of the two. Dickey's contract is a better contract and a more tradable contract. In Burley's case, you probably have to eat some of the money at the back end of his deal. I think you probably, you know, you do want to create space in your rotation for Sanchez. So Sanchez, Stroman, Hutchison, J-Hap's actually had a kind of a quietly had a really good year. You've got Dan Norris banging on the door in AAA. So you've got some options there. But there are going to be some exits from this team. You know, Brandon Morrow, they're not going to pick up his option. Casey Jansen's going to be gone. They're going to need a closer. Colby Rasmus is going to be gone. So they're going to have to make a decision on center field and whether a guy like Dalton Pompey is ready to, or whether it's Ghost, or whether it's Ghost in a platoon. You got to go out and get a second baseman. No, you really do. And, you know, there might be some discussion around a guy like Jose Reyes, although, again, he's got a tricky contract to move. You know, could you get value for him back? But I guess the exciting part, if you want to talk about, you know, you want to be on the positive side here, it is those young pitchers who are, you know, not just very talented and, you know, three of them are pitching in the majors and pitching effectively, but they're cheap and they're going to be controllable. And that gives you some flexibility payroll-wise in the rest of the roster.
I don't know that there's a bigger point of interest in the offseason than what they do with Melky Cabrera, because clearly he deserves a huge raise. He's been sensational. I think he's second in the majors in hits behind Jose Altuve in Houston. And yet here's another question about how dedicated ownership is with winning. He's a great guy. There's four Dominicans on the team. He fits in. Do they bring him back?
It's, you know, it's an I would think that would be the goal, would be to keep him around. He has been, you know, and again, remember, they pulled him off the PED scrap heap, and they lived through a season last year, a tough season when it turned out he had a tumor on his spine. And I know, you know, it's not about loyalty, it's about money, but, you know, that they did throw him a bone at a time when no one else in baseball was willing to, and they did sit through a tough season while he was getting well. So, you know, I think they'd love to bring Melky back. Just kind of hard to know, and again, you kind of have to calculate what the market will determine in terms of his value and how that fits in with what you're trying to do. It's not, you know, it's not just, well, again, it's, I think you have to go, Alex Anthopoulos is going to have to go to ownership and make a case and say, look, this is where we're going to spend the money, and this is why we're spending the money, and, you know, make a case that Melky Cabrera's market value is a good investment. You know, I think you can make that case, and I'm not sure who plays left field if he's not there. That's the other thing. You know, there's not, they don't really have somebody ready to step into that job who can do what Melky Cabrera does.
Now, and again, last one for you from me. The obviously, with the non-waiver trade deadline having come and gone, we're now seeing some players starting to filter through waivers. When they clear, then they can, you know, obviously they're available to be traded. If the Jays are of the same mindset that we are, or at least Anthopoulos, who might be a candidate that would either be picked up on waivers and then you can negotiate a trade, or might slide through waivers that you could get some assets for?
I don't think you're going to get much back for anybody that's there right now, you know, on kind of a prorated basis, somebody that you want to lose. You know, you'd be talking about guys that, you know, playing out the tail end of their contract, a guy like Erasmus, but what are you going to get? You know, Juan Francisco, he was a waiver claim anyway, right? They got him for nothing. Would somebody pick him up and take a shot at, you know, use him as a pinch hitter, maybe? Although, boy, he's been exposed the second half of the season. So I'm not sure there is a whole lot there that is going to get you much, and, you know, even a kind of an addition by subtraction. It's, you know, we're only got a month left in the season, so I don't expect anything to happen there.
I think one of the biggest frustrations of being a fan of this baseball club is that they have the wealthiest ownership in baseball, the company that owns this station and that pays your checks and mine, Stephen. Do we really know where this new change in ownership stands, given that Paul Beeston's seen a lot of his close buddies exit the company? There's questions about whether he'll return. Do we really know how committed they are to winning versus just the bottom line and a return on an investment?
Well, I'll play devil's advocate here, right? Again, number one, I think Paul Beeston is done. I think Paul Beeston will retire at the end of this season for a variety of reasons, you know, including the fact that he's, you know, of the age when guys retire. But, you know, the Jays have the 10th or 11th highest payroll in baseball. Ownership made a massive commitment last year, took a massive leap last year in payroll because of the Marlins deal and the Dickey deal and signing Cabrera and all the stuff they did. So they threw out $130+ million last year and finished with 74 wins. So the notion that kind of corporate ownership, or you know, honestly any ownership, would kind of double down on that after what happened last year, you know, their position was, we're going to sit back and, you know, you told us this was a 2 or 3 year thing. Well, let's see what happens. So that's where they were coming from, because it's not like the money they invested paid any dividends. I think in the middle of this season, the end of May and June, they would have been very enthused about the TV ratings. The attendance has crept up as the season's gone on, but of course the thing has gone in the tank. And I don't, you know, the Irvin Santana thing at the beginning of the season aside, and remember again, that's ownership stepping back and saying, no, we gave you guys $130 million and you stunk. We're not going to necessarily give you any more right now. I'm not sure that, other than psychologically, that there was a deadline deal. We're not talking David Price, but you know, I'm not sure the Martin Prados and Brandon McCarthy's, although you know it's worked out okay for the Yankees, were game changers for this team. Aside from maybe psychologically and emotionally, they haven't scored any runs. You know, they haven't scored any runs in 5 weeks. And you look at that lineup, you say, why not? And I don't have the answer to that.
Stephen, have a great week. Do you have any Labor Day football traditions or anything that you do special for the big game on that weekend?
No, I don't. I'm not. I do have a Garney Henley jersey that I will be wearing if I get to go, and because he's my all-time favorite player. And other than that, no, I'm going to go with my mom. And I've been going to that game since I was a little kid. And I hate the Argonauts. You know, I hate them. Nothing personal. I just hate them. It's in my genetic code. So I will go and I will yell horrible things at the Argonauts.
You will do that?
Yes, I will. Oh, absolutely. I personally take credit for, you know, Zenon Andrusicin once having a punt block because I think he heard me.
Is that on your resume?
I'd like. You know what? If I could put it on my resume, yeah, it would be at the top.
Good stuff. Hey, well, enjoy. I know we'll talk to you before the weekend hits, but thanks for this. We'll talk to you Friday.
All right, see you guys.
You bet. There's our good friend Stephen Brunt, brought to you by Eastside Kia. And it's no bull. Receive 0% financing up to 84 months combined with up to $4,000 in discounts. Get a 2014 Rio automatic, just $16,380. Visit eastsidekia.ca.